here. Title of this retreat says a lot, really. Living into death and dying into life. You remember Jesus saying, if you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you'll never die. And in the deepest sense, that's true, because we're living right up to the moment of what we call death. And death is an entry immediately into life. So, as we watch Jesus this morning, suffering and how he suffered, how he lived through all of that, hopefully it'll help us all. I won't delay on this because I've written it for you, Kim and Colleen, on your sheet. The others know how to do this. I do have a website, and if any of the material here today attracts you, you want to go back to it, well then you click on Christian Living and then go through those processes that are noted on your sheet and you'll find this opening up. I want to start in what may appear a strange place, and then I'm going to pause and say nothing for about 3 minutes while you ponder. This is a statement made by Aeschylus, one of the famous playwrights in classical Greek. He's writing at the same time as Ezra, the priest, is bringing the Torah over to Yehud or Judah. And so it's a vital time in many cultures. And here, this very wise man writes, to learn, you must suffer. Even in our sleep, pain that cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart. And in our own despair, against our will, comes wisdom to us by the awful grace of God. I'd like to pause now for an extended time, and maybe you might like to think, each of you, what has suffering taught you? What wisdom, he says, against our will almost, what wisdom has suffering brought to you, to each of you and to me, in our lives? For me, two things stand out. One is a realization that I'm not always faithful to because of my temperament, but a realization that I'm not self-reliant, because by temperament I tend to be that. And of course suffering shows I can't be. And that's a little bit of wisdom, I hope. And the other is a compassion, which I'm sure we'll all share, for people in their suffering, because we kind of know what it can be like, though it's different for everyone. Paul writes, we carry with us in our body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus too may always be seen in our body. I'm not real sure what he means there, but I'm sure we can all get a feel for it. It's the dying of Jesus that we're experiencing when we're suffering. And he prays that what people will see is Jesus living, loving, believing, as the mother and the beloved disciple, that's each of us, the beloved disciple, as they stood there at the foot of the cross. Peter goes further and he says, rejoice. Insofar as you're sharing Christ's suffering, you're sharing Christ's suffering, so that you may also be glad and shout for joy when his glory is revealed. So we're not suffering alone, we're actually sharing his suffering. And he's sharing ours. Dear Pope Francis, in the encyclical The Joy of the Gospel, writes, joy adapts and changes, but it always endures. Even as a flicker of light born of our personal certainty that when everything is said and done, we are infinitely loved. I understand, the Pope writes, the grief of people who have to endure great suffering. Yet slowly but surely, we all have to let the joy of faith slowly revive as a quiet yet firm trust, even amid the greatest distress. And he continues by quoting this extraordinary passage from the Book of Lamentations. The author describes his suffering, and it's enormous. And then it picks up, as you'll see. My soul is bereft of peace, he says. I've forgotten what happiness is. But this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. Every morning they are renewed. Great is your faithfulness. And the wisdom he's learned is, it's good to wait in silence for the Lord to save. That little picture is, of course, the one on the wall here. Just a photograph of that. Mary and Jesus at the cross. And our founder, Jules Chevalier, writes, from the heart of Jesus, pierced on Calvary, I see a new world coming forth. A new world for each of us and for the world. A new world coming forth. A great life-giving world, inspired by love and mercy. A world which the church must perpetuate on the whole earth. So we need each other, and as a community, we know something from the heart of Jesus, and our mission is to believe it and then share it. John writes of that same scene. They will look on the one whom they have pierced. And why are we looking at the one that we've pierced by our sin and our failures, etc.? Because John, when he looked, saw blood and water coming from the heart of Jesus. Jesus appears to be dead. In a superficial sense, he is dead, but he's not dead. His heart is alive, pouring out grace to us. Paul writes, and it would be beautiful if we could all come to this. Paul talks about how he used to live. He was very strong, very self-righteous in a way, very certain of his Pharisee upbringing, very intelligent, and he rightly in his mind persecuted the early church because they were making claims for Jesus which were abhorrent to him. But then he came to a realization. He says, now it's different. Now I live in faith. What faith? Not his faith. The faith he lives is the faith of the Son of God. Jesus is sharing with him, with each of us, his faith, his spirit, his prayer, his love, his courage, his consolation, his compassion. We've all got that, each of us. And he's sharing that with Paul. And Paul is experiencing the faith that Jesus had on the cross. I live now in faith, the faith of the Son of God, loving me and giving himself for me. I cannot give up God's gift. And that's a gift given to each of us. That rather beautiful bronze piece of work, as you see, there's Jesus dying in the middle there. And you can hear him praying, my God, why have you abandoned me? So there's nothing wrong with feeling abandoned. Jesus did. And he gave voice to it. Why have you abandoned me? But as the other part of the bronze tells us, he goes on to say, into your hands I commend my spirit, my life. So Jesus never died. Yes, he suffered on the cross and it brought about a final collapse of this system, but he goes straight into life. Sometimes in the New Testament it's said that Jesus must suffer. He says it himself. And when it's said that Jesus must suffer, are we being told that we needed to see him love in the darkest place, to shake us out of our lethargy and to save us from the futility of being caught up in a meaningless way of life, in a desperate search for freedom in all the wrong places? Now that will apply to each of us differently, but maybe one of the wisdoms that we've come to through suffering is to not put our hopes and energy into distracting places, but to be caught up in this love of God. We do not seek suffering, of course. But if the only way to avoid suffering is to avoid loving, we have Jesus' example to encourage us to love. And you can suffer and love. He shows us that. And when he gives his Spirit to each of us, he's giving us his prayer and his faith and his hope and his love. And that enables us to live his life. Mark writes, when the centurion who stood facing Jesus saw how Jesus died, not that he died. Some of us may have had the idea at some stage that Jesus died to save us. No, he lived to save us. The dying was what people did to him. It was an atrocious sin against the will of God. But how he died, with patience, love, forgiveness, trust, enabled this centurion to see something wonderful. And he said, indeed, this man was God's son. Something transcendently divine about this Jesus dying on the cross. Jesus shows us how to live unto death, and he shows us that dying is into life. And every time we come to Mass, as we will later today, this afternoon, we experience what's said here. Jesus took a loaf of bread, and when he'd given thanks, of course, to God, he broke the bread, gave it to his disciples, and said, this is my body, this is me, given for you. Do this in memory of me. Do what I'm doing. Give your life, even though there's not much of it there. Even at times when we've got nothing apparently to give, we've always got ourselves to give. But even then, do what Jesus is doing. Offer our life right through to others in love, the way Jesus offered his life to nourish us. And then Jesus did the same with a cup, we're told, saying, this cup is poured out for you as a new covenant in my blood. And we can call on that covenant, that promise, that commitment of Jesus to each of us, because it's always there for us. We are comforted for others and for ourselves by the memory of Jesus' words about the widow at the end of the public ministry. They're at the temple, they've arrived in Jerusalem. From then on, you go into the Passion. And you know the scene where he sees an old woman in black. She's a widow, she's got no son and no husband. And Jesus said, she puts in two little 1 cent pieces, that'd be our equivalent. They're kind of useless in a way, apparently, but they're not. she puts in these two little coins. And Jesus said, she put in more than all the others. Why? Because she gave what she had, all she had. Now, it's not much, but it's everything. And that's the greatest gift. And Mark puts it right at Peter, through Mark, puts it right at the end of the public ministry to let us know that being a disciple of Jesus, this is the perfect scene for that. Whatever little we have, give it in love. Jesus says, when you've lifted up the Son of Man, then you'll realize that I am. I am is the Greek behind it. Is the translation of Yahweh, the sacred name, the burning bush, the God who wants to redeem and relieve and take us out of our slavery and take us to freedom. Or what Jesus says, I've come that you may live to the full. And Jesus lived to the full, even, perhaps especially on the cross. He just gave love. You'll realize who Jesus is, the revelation of God, the Redeemer God, and that I do nothing on my own, said Jesus. I speak these things as the Father instructed me, and the one who sent me is with me. We can all say that. He has not left me alone. And then he gives us the key to that. For me and you, I always do what is pleasing to my Father. Probably can't say it as absolutely as that, but we can learn it. And we can come to the point where we can say it. In the Acts of the Apostles, Luke writes, though they found no cause for a sentence of death, those residing in Jerusalem and their leaders asked Pilate to have him killed. Dreadful. And there's no covering that up. It's totally dreadful. But God raised him from the dead. God's role on Calvary is love, embracing Jesus and taking him into communion. I don't need to delay on this with you, I imagine. The act of crucifying Jesus was an act against the will of God. Pilate made his judgment because he wasn't listening. The high priest stubbornly insisted because he wasn't listening. The fickle crowd said, crucify him, because they weren't listening. But someone was listening, and that's Jesus. And where there's love, we find God. One of Jesus' last parables talks about the vineyard and how he sent the vine owner, sent these people in, the prophets, of course. And it goes on, the owner of the vineyard still had one other, a beloved son. Finally, he sent this beloved son to them And God saying, surely they'll respect my son. Surely they'll listen. Surely we'll listen. Surely we'll let Jesus convince us that God loves us absolutely. But the tenants said to one another, this is the heir, come let's kill him and the inheritance will be ours. They seized him, killed him and threw him out of the vineyard. And so we come to this very sacred place, each of us in our own way. It's Jesus' agony. It's real. And Jesus prays, Abba, Father. All things are possible for you. Remove this cup from me. We're allowed to pray to be rid of suffering. We're allowed to pray for miracles. We're allowed to pray for whatever a child prays for to a father. As long as we come to this point, at the end of our honest prayer, Jesus wants the cup removed, but he says, but let your will, not mine, be done. Not, for heaven's sake, not saying, God, you want me to die. God never wanted Jesus to die. But God, I want to do your will. I know what to do, he said. And God's will was that he eat with sinners, embrace lepers, confront injustice, love those responsible for injustice, challenge the Pharisees, plead with Pilate, all that stuff. Jesus knew what to do the will of God, whatever happened. What happened tragically was his murder on the cross. But that didn't stop him loving. And it won't stop us loving either. Because we know what to do. We know we're asked to live into dying. None of us know, but I might have a year or two. I can't imagine much more. And some of you will have a lot more than that, please God. But we don't know. What we do know is that we're to live that journey, knowing that when the moment comes when we can't live it anymore, we'll be taken into God's embrace. We'll die into life, as Jesus did. On the cross, Jesus offered his life, his love, his very self to God and to us in order to draw us into communion with God. It's what we mean by salvation or redemption, to experience communion with God. And to be in communion with God is to be made holy. Holy is the one word in the whole Bible that's kept only for God. No place is holy, no other person is holy, God alone is holy. So when we say that someone is holy, we're saying God is there in them, the Holy One. Well, God's in each of us. And the word to be made holy in Latin is sacrum facere. To be made sacrum. And that's where we get our word sacrifice. It's been abused, that word. Sacrifice is a totally beautiful word. It means entry into the holy, embraced by the Holy One. Which we all are. We've had 6 funerals in our cemetery this year so far. And maybe I'm the only one like this, but probably you might be like it too. I couldn't help noticing all of them were younger than me, the whole 6 of them. So it's a bit, life's short for any of us. But there's Jesus and the beautiful women, broken-hearted but loving. It's natural to find suffering hard to accept. If we keep our eyes on Jesus, it's possible to glimpse in suffering a meaning that would otherwise evade us, perhaps a wisdom. In our weakness and suffering, we experience a strength that's not our own. Ultimately, we discover ourselves only in God's love. And to enjoy God's love, we must transcend our own self. We must let go our natural tendency to focus on ourselves. We must learn to welcome and offer love. It's here, it seems to me, that suffering plays an irreplaceable role. For suffering forces us. You may not need this to be forced, but I think I did, or do. It's here that suffering plays its irreplaceable role. For suffering forces us to recognize the basic flaw in our thinking that we're meant to be self-reliant. Our culture tells us that. And it's wrong. But that's the air we're breathing. It forces us to face our dependence, and it invites us to trust. For we cannot reach the goal of our human fulfillment except in dependence upon and communion with God. And that's clearly a beautiful place to be. Suffering engages our energy, which drives us to face whatever it is that's causing the suffering and its effect it has upon us, and to listen at every level to what's going on in our psyche as well as our body. And when we listen, we hear ourselves being asked to let go. Not to let everything go, but to let go what's going anyhow. And hold on to all the energy and life that we have. But to focus on loving now, Jesus on the cross. He had to let go a lot. He couldn't reach out and embrace the man on the cross next to him. He couldn't see very well. He couldn't think too well. But he could love. So when we listen, we hear ourselves being asked to let go. Leave it go. It's like Peter in the boat at the sea, it's storming, and you remember that beautiful scene, and Jesus is, inverted commas, it's a drama, of course, walking on the water. And Peter says to Jesus, well, he said, if you ask me, I could come to you on the water too. I could walk on water. And Jesus said, of course you could walk on water. Come. Now Peter actually, in the story, left the boat. Now he didn't think, I'll have to leave the boat. He walked towards Jesus, and in doing so, necessarily, he found himself outside the boat, walking on water. We're all asked to walk on water. And then he lost courage, as we do. And Jesus grabbed him and said, "It's okay. Do you think I let you go?" For the disciple of Jesus, and there's two of them there, the mother and the beloved disciple, is called that because it's meant to be each of us. For the disciple of Jesus, there's a profound sense in which suffering can unite us to him. In our tradition, we constantly make the sign of the cross. We put the cross on our body. And we embrace the one on the cross. And he, of course, embraces us. That's the point of the sign of the cross. Throughout our life, many times we've had to die to something precious. Each time we accept to die, to let go, accept it, we experience a deeper communion with God, who loves us through our dying and who raises us up to fuller life of deeper intimacy. Our fidelity, generosity and courage, and we may not feel faithful, we may not feel generous, and we may not feel courageous, but none of those have anything to do with feelings. They're commitments. Our fidelity, generosity and courage enable God to keep offering us a fuller life beyond our experienced horizon. But each acceptance of the offer requires a new dying. This will involve suffering until all roots of resistance to God's love have been burned away by God's Holy Spirit, the living flame of love. Till ultimately, I and each of you we'll have nothing left except love. And how beautiful is that? Paul has no doubt, if we've been united with Jesus in a death like his, we'll certainly be united with him in a resurrection like his. We're heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ. If in fact we suffer with him so that we may also be glorified with him, I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory about to be revealed to us. Perhaps the most wonderful thing about suffering is that through it, Jesus invites us to join with him in redeeming the world. It's this truth that caused Jesus' followers to find joy in their suffering. Here's Paul. "I'm now rejoicing in my sufferings for your sake, and I'm completing what is lacking in my flesh of Christ's afflictions for the sake of his body." And Peter, again, "Rejoice insofar as you're sharing Christ's sufferings, so that you may be glad and shout for joy when his glory is revealed." and in what was one of his last letters written to his favourite community in Philippi, Paul writes, "I want to know Christ and the power of his resurrection, of his risen life, and the sharing of his sufferings by becoming like him in his dying." And I'll now read to you, if I may, from Paul's letter to the Corinthians. It's a long passage, but it's, I hope, encouraging. "It's God who said, 'Let light shine out of darkness,' who has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God on the face of Jesus. We have this treasure in clay jars, so that it may be made clear that this extraordinary power belongs to God and doesn't come from us. We're afflicted in every way, but we're not crushed. We're perplexed, but not driven to despair. We're persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. Always carrying in the body the dying of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be visible in our bodies. For while we live," Paul goes on, "we're always being given up to death for Jesus' sake, so that the life of Jesus may be made visible in our mortal flesh. We know that the one who raised the Lord Jesus will raise us also with him and bring us with him into his presence." And he concludes, "So we don't lose heart. Even though our inner nature is wasting away, our inner nature is being renewed day by day. For the slight momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory beyond all measure. Because we look not at what can be seen, but at what cannot be seen. For what can be seen is temporary, but what cannot be seen is eternal. For we know that if this earthly tent we live in is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this tent we groan, longing to be clothed with our heavenly dwelling, so that what is mortal may be swallowed up by life." I'll conclude with this and then a piece of music. Suffering itself will be experienced as a grace. I'm sure you have all found that. Suffering itself will be experienced as a grace, deepening our love and bringing about our purification and redemption, liberation. Suffering is part of every life. Let suffering be a cross for us who are disciples of Jesus. For then we can embrace him who died there, knowing that he is embracing us.